This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture with Tina Camellia, Lim Suen, and Sumitra Selvaraj. Our next story today is related to our Twitter poll.
Where we're asking you, has the recent hype over the Women's World Cup convinced you to start following women's football? So 65% of you have said no, it hasn't. 21% of you said that it has, that you are starting to follow women's football, with 13% of you saying that I already follow it. So you can continue to share your thoughts. We can take that poll at Twitter on Twitter at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can also call us at 03-77-33-2900.
So it was the US versus the Netherlands in the Women's World Cup final last night. I stayed up all night for that. The US emerged triumphant with a 2-0 victory over the Dutch side, and with that win, the US defended the title, having won it in the previous edition of the Women's World Cup. It is their fourth title since the first inception, and meanwhile, it is actually the first time the Dutch side had reached the final, having made their debut only in the last in the previous edition in 2015, before being knocked out in the round of 16 in that edition. So that really is progress for them.
But now that the tournament is over, what does it mean for the future of women's football? We speak to Lin Chu, a footy fan and a regular guest on BFM's very own football show, On The Ball, for her comments. Lin, let's start first with the most important question. Were you following the tournament and who were you supporting?
Yes, I was. I tried to follow most of the matches, but not so much of the preliminary ones because, you know, they were screened at really unearthly times. So, but more so towards the, from the round of 16 onwards. I was supporting the Lionesses, although it was a far call when I knew that, you know, they're going up against US, no way they could beat them.
Did the Women's World Cup live up to your expectations?
I think it was brilliant. It was what I expected to be, and in fact, even so much more. I mean, the quality that that we saw on the pitch was just amazing. You know, I mean, when people talk about women's football, you know, a lot of people just brush it off like, ah, it's just women's football. But if only they just watched it, right? It's just amazing. I mean, the quality that they bring to the pitch is amazing. And while women's football is completely different from men's in the sense that women are built differently, so we play a different game, but they are not lacking of the skills, you know? England, actually, they were doing very, very well. My favourite player is Lucy Bronze, their right back. I saw her, I watched her at the Champions League. She played for Lyon. They've got a bunch of good players, especially the players from Manchester City. City have got very, very good players. They've got Steph Horton. They've got Ellen White. She was in line to get the Golden Boot together with Morgan and Rapinoe. But I think they just need to work on the penalties. They've missed like 3 penalties there. Throughout the tournament.
You mentioned Lucy Bronze. Now, Phil Neville, the England coach, mentioned in a press conference that she is, quote, the best player in the world. That's pretty high praise coming from one former England defender to another.
Well, yes, in fact, she won the silver ball, which is the second best player right after Rapinoe.
And so you referenced Rapinoe and Alex Morgan earlier, the star players of the US team. What do you think of the Americans' dominance in women's football?
There were a few times during the tournament where they sort of were in danger of losing the game. But I think they are just too good at it. I mean, for now, they've got the experience, you know, they've got the swagger. They've right now, like, the only other team that probably could have beaten them might have been England. But even that was a far cry. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If they had lost, it would have been kind of like luck. I mean, if you have watched US, they are just explosive. You know, they are creative. And England, yeah. And I suppose, I mean, coming under a new coach as well, Phil Neville. So, well, you know, Joe Ellis has been their coach for since the last tournament. So maybe that's something that they could work on, you know, for future.
And speaking of dominance, the quarterfinals onwards featured 7 European countries plus the US. What does this say about women's football in other regions outside of North America and Europe, and especially in Asia?
Oh, I think in Asia, we're still a long, long way to go because I think over in Asia, it's still very much seen as a men's sport. And I mean, if you look at the Asian teams in the tournament, I mean, there's just a huge disparity. I mean, look at the goal difference between USA and Thailand, you know. So I think it's just not the culture here to be to have football as, you know, a curricular for girls, you see. When I checked with my school, my previous school, until now they still don't have, you know, they don't provide football as a curricular activity. So I think it's important that, you know, we need to include all this at grassroots level before we can actually grow it up to a certain level. I mean, even if you look at the men's quality of football here, you know, it's, I would say you can't even compare it to the women's football at World Cup.
And now that the World Cup has ended, do you think the hype will continue or will it die down? Is there a promising future for women's football in the international stage?
Oh, definitely there is. I mean, with the US winning and, you know, paving the way, there seems to be a lot more interest right now. I mean, I get friends, female friends who never talk about football, who never watch football. They actually, you know, calling me and sending me texts. And then I get male friends who never talk about women's football, and they did. So I think, it was very successful because, you know, it managed to garner lots of attention. And it also set a record-breaking viewership worldwide. I think it was 1 billion or something like that. I think I'm just very glad that, I mean, even though my team was England, but I'm very happy that US won. Because I think when they won, it's not just in terms of winning medals, but they've won on more levels. Because before the tournament, they were actually demanding for equal pay. They actually sued their federation for discrimination against the women's team. And I think this is really good because it paves the way for other teams, other women's team as well, so that they can get better wages, better medical treatment, and better access to facilities and coaching. And I'm really glad that Rapinoe did her talking on the pitch as well. And, you know, this is her reply to her haters.
So that was Lin Chu, hardcore football fan, obviously, but also a regular panelist on BFM's football show On The Ball.
And we have had received a WhatsApp comment from Bobby Wong. So he said, regrettably, none of my male football friends followed the tournament. I thought it was wonderful. I was pleasantly surprised at how good some of the players were. The US team deserved a victory as they were clearly the best side of the tournament. So he's also given as a fact. Mm-hmm. So there are about 1.8 million registered female players of all ages in the US. So this is more than the next 7 countries combined. And 30% of all school and college female students in the US play the game, and it's the most popular college sport for women in America. But he also says that it's sad that we won't be seeing any of them play for the next 4 years because there's no TV broadcast at all.
Yeah, I think the NWSL, which is the National League in the US, they have an app and it is available for international viewers. I think there's a subscription involved, but you can basically watch their games, especially the American players. I think all of them are, all the players in the national team play in the domestic league. But I think England has a WSL, the Women's Soccer League. I don't know where it's broadcast. I think BBC broadcasts. We can't access BBC from here. But I think, yeah, I mean, I've been following women's football both in the international games but also the domestic leagues. It is really hard to watch their matches. At most, you get a YouTube clip of the highlights and so on. But yeah, interesting statistics, definitely. And I think part of it historically has to do with Title IX when they fought for Title IX, Billie Jean King basically ensured that girls and boys have equal opportunity in sports. And that's why their collegiate system requires the same amount of investment in resources for the men's sports as the women's sports.
I'd like to see that translated into pay as well.
Yeah. That's been an ongoing fight for the past four or 5 years. Yeah.
But what the big question is, what are you going to do now, Tina, that the World Cup is over?
Well, the Euro Championship qualifiers coming up next. The Netherlands, they are the title holder, but we'll see if they can hold on to it.
I think I remember reading a news report? Nike said something about how the women's jersey became the best-selling jersey.
Of all time.
Amazing, yeah?
Of all time. Incredible. And what's interesting about that is that in the past, for the men's game, when you have these replica jerseys, they're made for both men for with the men's cut, yes, and a women's cut, yes, in all sizes. But for the women's jerseys, they were only produced in the women's cut. And this is the first time where they also produce the jersey for the men's cut, because obviously a man probably wouldn't want to buy the women's cut if the women's cut is the only one that's available.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I remember reading a news report, I think it was on the BBC actually, about how it was quite refreshing to be able to see, you know, men watching games with, you know, the names of women players, yeah, on their backs, which is nice.
Yeah, and I mean, the constant argument about why there's not enough funding in the women's game is that there's no commercial interest. But obviously with the sales of the jerseys, yes, it's shown that, you know, there's a lot of people who are interested in the women's game.
Yes, well, Trump has already said that he's in favor of equal pay. He's in favor. But apparently a few more things need to be ironed out. Well, hopefully this is, you know, this is what is going to prove to him that equal pay is on the cards.
Yeah, it's so interesting for the US being the best team in the world. They still have a lot to fight for. Mm-hmm. I mean, compared to us and our short history, yeah, of women's football.
Actually, not so short, if you think about it. I remember reading this really fascinating article a long time ago in the New Straits Times about how women's football came to be in Malaysia. And the story starts all the way back in 1960, mm-hmm, when very elite soldiers from Malayan Special Force, the MSF, they were sent off to Congo on a peacekeeping mission. I think this is something that is in our history books. We all know how 500-600 men were sent off to Congo. But, you know, Malaya was a new nation at that point in time, and we didn't have a lot of resources. So our then Prime Minister said that what we should do as Malayans is to help our you know, soldiers along by fundraising for them. Surprisingly, one of the first groups of people to jump to the forefront of fundraising was a group of nurses at a hospital in Perak. And they said, well, we're going to put together a football team and then we're going to play charity matches. And then whatever gate collection that you can get, we'll send off to our boys in Congo. And that's how the first ever kind of football team, women's football team in Malaya was put together. And that Perak continued to lead the way for women's football. They were responsible for the first league being set up as well. So, yeah. Well,
that's interesting. I didn't know that. For once, a women's football trivia, you know, fun fact that I don't know.
Learn something new every day on the Daily Digest.
Indeed. So I guess a final check on our Twitter poll.
On which we were asking you, has the recent hype over the Women's World Cup convinced you to start following women's football? So the majority of you, 67%, have still voted no, you won't. 19% of you said that you will start following the women's football, and 14% say you already follow it.
So I'm the minority as usual, the 14%.
It is, but I think seeing all this hype has made me quite interested in this. But I think it's also the problem of accessibility.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned, that's right.
It's not being televised enough. So even if you are interested in it, it's very difficult to get your eyes on it.
Hopefully this will change, though. Yeah,
hopefully.
Anyway, that's all we have this hour, but you can keep the conversation going. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or look us up on Facebook, BFM The Bigger Picture. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcasts from our BFM site, bfm.my/dailydigest. You can also find our BFM app or look us up on Spotify. Now, speaking of health and sports, at some point in your life, you've probably suffered from back pain. It can be a nagging problem that never really goes away. How do you manage it so that it doesn't disrupt your daily routines? Find out more about back pain and common spine problems from Dr. Chui Yu Seng, consultant orthopedic surgeon from Ara Damansara Medical Center. That's tomorrow on Health and Living at 4 p.m. But today at 3 p.m. on Earth Matters, Kelly Anissa finds out what it means to declare a climate emergency. For now, though, here's Sixpence None the Richer with There She Goes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.